Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a new poll that finds the overwhelming majority of Trump supporters believe he is honest and trustworthy and will keep his campaign promises. At the same time, they do not believe the mainstream media, with 78% of Trump voters believing that news organizations regularly produce false stories. Ben Schreckinger, who covers national politics for Politico, joins us to discuss his latest article at Politico magazine, Trump's Fake War on the Fake News, and the paradox that while Trump's lies are working with cynical perfection on his base, he also wants the approval of the mainstream media that he demonizes as he spends a lot of his time obsessing over how he is covered and how his underlings like Sean Spicer are performing on his behalf. We will also look into the trickle-down nature of the culture of lying in the White House that has junior staffers routinely lying to the press just for fun. Then we'll gauge the reactions to the highly touted but thinly supported tax cut and tax reform proposals announced at the White House yesterday and assess the impact of the tax cuts on the deficit with Frank Clemente, the executive director and co-founder of Americans for Tax Fairness. He joins us to explain how getting rid of the estate tax and the alternative minimum tax while cutting the corporate tax to 15% will benefit Trump and enrich him, his family, his friends, and members of his cabinet. Then finally, we'll get an update on the deteriorating situation in Venezuela, where the son of a top official in the Maduro government made a heartfelt appeal to his father on video, begging him to, quote, to end the injustice that has sunk this country. Jennifer McCoy, a professor of political science at Georgia State University and author of The Unraveling of Representative Democracy in Venezuela and International Mediation in Venezuela, joins us to discuss plans for an intervention by the Organization of American States that may come too late as this heavily armed country is poised to descend into violent chaos. And joining us now is Ben Schreckinger, who covers national politics for Politico and previously wrote for Slate, Newsweek, The Atlantic, The Boston Globe, Boston Magazine, and The Financial Times, among others. His latest article at Politico magazine is Trump's Fake War on the Fake News. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ben Schreckinger.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So, Ben, there's an extraordinary paradox here, and it comes out in your article that we just learned from this new poll by the Washington Post and ABC that Trump's supporters believe him overwhelmingly and don't believe the mainstream media. And yet Trump, while he plays to his base and feeds this endless blizzard of lies, at the same time, the mainstream press that he castigates, he tries to court, which he's always done throughout his entire career. So what is the game that's going on here? On the one hand, he's got his base in an alternative universe. He's pandering to them, putting down the mainstream media. But at the same time, it's almost like he really, at the end of the day, really wants the mainstream media's approval as well. He wants it both.
Right.
He wants it both ways, in other words.
That's right. And I think there's an extent to which this is strategic, to which it's been a huge winner for him politically to beat up on the press. And at the same time, as with any presidential administration, in reality, you have to deal with the press. And so there's that political aspect to it. And I think that even more importantly for this administration is the personal aspect for someone like Trump. When he's trashing the press, he's venting his real frustration. But that frustration is so real and so palpable for him when he doesn't get the coverage he wants, because he loves the media. He loves to consume it. He loves to talk to reporters. We had a story up today that says where we have one of his advisors saying that that's essentially his favorite activity. And there's nothing more gratifying for him than the experience of successfully spinning a reporter, successfully getting a flattering story out there. So it really is a really important dynamic in understanding how this administration has played out so far.
Well, the way you describe it in your article, Politico magazine, Ben Schreckinger, in Trump's fake war on the fake news, is that it's sort of like what anthropologists observed in with the Dene people in Papua New Guinea, a form of ritualized warfare. And the Dene people are famous for having this ritual where they and the rival tribe in the next valley meet in a neutral territory and line up against each other and shout insults for all day long and fire arrows that are designed to miss. And if they actually hit somebody, then they have to forfeit somebody on their side. So it is a brilliant way to kind of vent, but absolutely do no damage.
That's right. And I think that when you look at some of these press conferences with the huffing and puffing on both sides, and I think it's been noted for a few years now that television reporters especially can grandstand at presidential news conferences a little bit in the way they ask questions because it's good for the cameras, and every network likes to be able to show a little clip of their own correspondent asking that tough question, even if every network ends up asking a president, you know, essentially the same question. So there is that theater aspect to it. And then towards the end, I talk about the fact that there are, you know, real grudges, the potential for a much realer conflict to blow up, sort of constantly lurking beneath the surface here. So far it's been mostly a fake war, but, you know, depending on the course of this administration, it could become more of a hot war.
But do you think, though, that the president, and this is, he wouldn't be the first president to do this, has also discovered the tool of distraction? In other words, he's clearly worried about the Russian story. And he certainly went to all kinds of lengths to get out from under that tweet where he called Obama a bad or a sick guy, falsely accusing him of wiretapping Trump Tower. And, you know, you could make the case that Devin Nunes' peculiar behavior was all a way to kind of distract that. But subsequent to that, he's fired a few cruise missiles at Syria, dropped a big bomb in Afghanistan, and threatened war with North Korea. That's certainly taken the Russian story off the headlines, not that it's not still on the back burner. So do you detect that at all?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely worth keeping the wag the dog scenario in mind. I think Trump, really better than most of our previous presidents, or at least recent previous presidents, understands the way that our overheated media environment works and understands the power of distraction especially. I think that you can go back to countless points during the campaign where Trump was getting hit hard with one controversy and said something new and outrageous that moved people on to another controversy. It's an interesting tactic, one that I think most people, most political consultants before 2016 would have really advised against, at least the way Trump does it, where he seems to at times purposely distract from one negative story by creating a new negative story all its own. But clearly he's done it in a way that's landed him in the White House, and there's no reason to believe that he would stop doing it now that he's there.
And again, I'm speaking with Ben Schreckinger, who covers national politics for Politico and previously wrote for Slate, Newsweek, The Atlantic, The Boston Globe, Boston Magazine, and The Financial Times, among others. His latest article at Politico Magazine is Trump's Fake War on the Fake News. And it's a very extensive article, Ben, and one of the things that's really extraordinary about it is that this atmosphere, obviously from the top down, it's almost like trickle-down lying. When you have sort of staffers, even ones that are not that important, lying for fun to the media, like it's a sport, that is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think that is really one of the more startling, eyebrow-raising things that I came across in reporting this piece, which is, you know, every political campaign is at the very least going to spin on questions. Many, if not most, political operations will lie to reporters at one point or another, usually to deny the existence of some negative episode, to deny some sort of scandal that really did occur. What's a little bit different about the extent to which the Trump White House takes it, according to at least three people close to the White House that have been warned about this practice, is that these guys will do it just for fun. Guys and gals will do it just for fun. Their attitude, as it's been described to our sources, is, well, you know, the media is just going to print what they want anyway, so we may as well have some fun. One very senior correspondent that we spoke to said that he was warned during the transition by a Trump official to be careful of really good details he gets on background from the White House because they're often made up. Shocking in some ways, but given that the boss is someone who, for much of the 80s and 90s, would call up tabloids, make up outlandish stories about himself, sometimes pretend to be his own spokesman, pretend to be someone named John Barron and calling his tabloid reporters. It's not surprising that, as you put it, that sort of form of lying has trickled down to other parts of the White House.
Well, those audio tapes of him pretending to be John Barron are pretty, pretty extraordinary to listen to. And the fact that Trump is obsessed with Spicer and his performance, and apparently takes time out of the day to actually watch the White House press conferences, which you'd think a president has better things to do, it's almost as if you were an actor, you're kind of more interested in the reviews than you are in your own performance. In other words, you know, like when a play is on Broadway, actors go racing down to Sardi's at 2 in the morning to get the earliest copy of the New York Times to see the reviews. It seems like Trump is more interested in the reviews of his performance, or in this case, Spicer's performance, than doing the job itself.
Yeah, that's spot on. And I recommend that you and your readers check out a piece that my colleagues put out today about Trump's first 100 days. Because one of the points they hammer home in that piece a couple of times is that Trump, when he's getting briefed on things, basically likes to be told how this is going to play out in the media. And that is a high, if not the highest priority for him as he's gaming out with his advisors what he's going to do. And more recently, since our piece has come out, the White House has started to put out a very similar line on Trump's view of Spicer, which is that the ratings are great. You can't beat his ratings, so his job's not in trouble right now. So, yeah, I think you essentially nailed that dynamic.
But what does it say about governance in the sense that if you have government by stunt, if the idea is to manipulate the press and get ratings and have good photo ops, and this may well happen at the expense of real governance, at what point does the public find out? Because, again, you go back to this Washington Post ABC poll, and it's as though there's an alternative universe where Trump's supporters are absolutely convinced that he doesn't lie and that the lying mainstream press lies. And it doesn't seem there's no crack in that wall from what I can tell.
Yeah, well, you know, politics to a certain degree is always going to have an element of theater. Trump has taken that to the extreme. He, for example, it was reported that he was basically casting his cabinet. He was deciding who had the look. John Bolton didn't have the look because he had a mustache to be Secretary of State, and so he didn't get the part or the appointment. What does this say about governance? It's most likely, in the final analysis, not the best way to govern. We'll find that out over a course of months and years, but certainly it's made for an entertaining form of government. People, both that walled off universe of his supporters who have sort of one view of reality and the people who don't support him who tend to subscribe to a different set of facts, I think can agree that they've at least both been transfixed by this administration so far.
Well, just to bring some statistics into this poll, because it's so extraordinary, the gap here. 80% of Trump's voters think it's a bigger problem that news organizations produce false stories, while only 3% of them think it's a bigger problem that the Trump administration makes false claims. 70% of Trump voters think the Trump administration regularly makes false claims, while 76% of Trump voters think he doesn't. 78% of Trump's voters think that news organizations regularly produce false stories, while only 19% of them think otherwise. And 84% of Trump voters think he's keeping most of his major campaign promises, while only 4% think he isn't. And 89% of them think he's honest and trustworthy. So that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
I mean, it is.
You know, that because the stuff that he says, I mean, you point out, of course, in your article about how, talk about Spicer, getting off to a shaky start. He was obviously, Trump made him go before the press and lie about the size of the crowds at the inauguration, which the evidence for which was just manifest and unambiguous. And yet he insisted, Spicer, that it was the biggest crowd in history. Isn't it amazing? It's just amazing.
It is amazing. We had some researchers, some Twitter researchers in from the MIT Media Lab this week, and they showed some journalists here at Politico a graphic of political Twitter that was grouped. It showed mutual follows. It showed this sort of constellation of active political Twitter accounts and who followed who. And the Trump supporters were all bunched up together on one side, and the connections between them were very dense. And then they were barely connected to the crescent that represented the rest of the political spectrum, which was all much more connected to each other. So you could sort of see these two epistemic systems that are pretty closed off from each other. So it's not just a media construct. It's not evident just in these poll results. You can sort of see the way in which these information environments are closed off from one another. And obviously that is not conducive to a shared public sphere.
So obviously you can identify the people that are a part of the kind of misinformation and shape-shifting of the truth. Spicer, of course, obviously doesn't want to confront his boss and has gone along with that, as we just pointed out from that extraordinary claim about the inauguration crowd. Kellyanne Conway has even said there's alternative facts. She seems to be a little bit more marginalized. But how does this approach, and Bannon himself apparently is a student of what the Russians call political technology, or a political technologist, Surkov, who was an advisor to Putin, who devised this method of shape-shifting and creating chaos and keeping everybody off balance, which it does seem to some extent Trump has borrowed from Surkov, or at least via Bannon. But at the end of the day, for example, the National Security Advisor has to deal with the reality, and so do the Joint Chiefs and these people. Their jobs are firmly anchored in the real world, with real world problems and, God forbid, real world crises. So how do you deal with that? For example, what would happen if GCHQ in the UK, which Trump has trashed, flashed to General McMaster that there's a real crisis going on, say, in Eastern Europe? And would Trump, when McMaster presented him with this, would he believe McMaster or would he believe Alex Jones?
That's a great question. The optimistic answer is that he would believe McMaster and that he's sort of, aware of the games he plays in terms of flirting with someone like Alex Jones and calling him respected and retweeting very questionable sources of information, outright dubious, outright false pieces of information. The real answer is that no one can say for certain, and that it's concerning that he's even given us, reason to ask the question. What's more certain is that at least almost certainly there's going to come a moment like that where we're going to find out, and we're also going to find out, the extent to which the administration will be able to mobilize the public behind a set of information that it presents during a crisis, or whether the public won't be able to quickly reach a consensus about whether to trust what the administration is telling it in a crisis. So we are sort of setting ourselves up for real potential problems, not if, but when a real crisis materializes.
Well, just in closing, Ben Schreckinger, the old expression is, of course, that eventually your lies will catch up with you. Do you think that the lies will catch up with Trump, or have they caught up with him? I mean, I frankly can't believe the word he says, because it's just been some of the lies have been such howlers that you almost have to laugh. But and the alacrity. And I understand he comes out of real estate, and he's a salesman, and, in that kind of mindset, resume embellishing and exaggeration and hyperbole are the rules of the road. But what's your sense of whether or not it's going to catch up on him?
I don't know. I don't know if anyone knows. I think it's sort of why we're all glued to the set, waiting to find out what exactly happens, how this all plays out. It's why the ratings for this presidency have been so good.
So maybe there's the answer there, right?
Yeah.
It's all about ratings. Well, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. This was lovely.
No, I enjoyed it. And again, I've been speaking with Ben Schreckinger, who covers national politics for Politico and previously wrote for Slate, Newsweek, The Atlantic, The Boston Globe, Boston Magazine, and The Financial Times, among others. His latest article at Politico Magazine is Trump's Fake War on the Fake News. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back gauging the reactions of the highly touted but thinly supported tax cut and tax reform proposals announced yesterday at the White House.